A reader lives a thousand lives before he dies. The man who never reads lives only one. Come into the reading room, all you lovers of language and literature. This is the place for those of us who believe that reading is essential as we seek to rise above the ordinary. And the reading room contains a host of extraordinary people, leading lights of the written word. Authors, literary critics, columnists, and ideas people will tantalize your minds with their wordplay while discussing the ideas and worldviews that form our wonderful literary milieu. Come step into a world of magic, the place of undiscovered treasures, a room of reading. This is a book of fortitude and faith, of resilience and love, as well as of gratitude in times of utmost suffering. Slaying Cancer Together is a beautifully written and moving account of the life of a fierce cancer warrior, mother, friend, sister, and wife. Lindy Liebenberg takes the reader on a compelling journey through the hardships and loves of her life as a child and young woman, culminating in her turbulent relationship with the disease that tried to kill her several times. Breast cancer and metastatic breast cancer did not dull this young woman's love for her savior, and instead only deepened it. It is truly a grand experience to share in this author's journey through this book. Liebenberg's debut is sure to provide hope and encouragement to those in need of it. Although this book is a perfect read for breast cancer patients, it's also ideal for those opposing any other kind of adversity, medical or non-medical. Prepare to be deeply touched. These words by Madeleine Rust, established author, motivational speaker, cancer warrior, and friend to Lindy Liebenberg. And joining us in the reading room today about her book, Slaying Cancer Together, we have Lindy herself. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Melanie. As my Pilates instructor, I look up to you and I'm very privileged to do this with you now.
Yeah, well, this is what it is. I mean, a lot of the time we meet people who are going through things that you are not aware of. And then you get a fright when you suddenly realize that somebody you have come into contact with has this incredibly heart-wrenching story. It's like on the motivational side of things, and people are always saying, oh yeah, but motivational books, you know, you're not going to know what it's like until you've actually gone through it yourself. But what made you feel that putting your story out there would actually be beneficial to other people?
Yes, so this all started with me writing down everything, because when I was diagnosed, there's just so many things. You have all these appointments and these tests you have to do, and then each doctor you come in contact with, they ask your story. And so I diarized everything. Mm. And one day my son just walked past me and he said, "Mom, why don't you write a book?" And I never thought about it. People that were also newly diagnosed, their friends got me to phone them. And then I just shared my story with them. And I could see as it went on that I really make a difference. I give a bit of hope because I'm positive. And I stay strong, and I put on my smile, and I appear that I look good. I always got the saying, if you look good, you feel good.
Yep.
Yes.
That's absolutely it. So when were you first actually diagnosed with cancer? How many years ago?
It was in January, how it happened in January 2019. I came from a Pilates class, and I took a shower. Mm-hmm. And then as I showered, I felt this big golf ball-size painless lump between my breast on the left side. And I even showed my husband and still made a joke and said, I stretch my breast muscle in Pilates because I'm always doing everything full out. And he was concerned immediately and said I had to go and check it out. But this cancer has never been a topic in our family because no one has had cancer. I'm the last of seven children, and we only two left, and my parents also passed away. And it was all heart problems or strokes or not cancer. Mm. So 2 weeks after that, I sat at work and this little inner voice just told me, you have to go. Something is not nice. And I went to Flora Clinic, and the gynae stood on the other side of the reception table. And when she saw me and I showed her the lump, she didn't even see me. She immediately wrote a letter and told me to go for a sonar. Mm. And yeah, so the sonar turned out to be a sonar, an ultrasound, a mammogram. And then they wanted to do a biopsy. They got a second doctor in, and it was at too dangerous place. And when I went back to her with my little brown envelope, she immediately phoned Professor Carol Ann Benn at Moore Park, the best. I didn't know nothing.
She is the number one person in South Africa, yeah.
And I got an appointment the very next day, so it must have been serious. But nobody ever let a word slip, cancer. Mm. I even didn't think that. So the very next day, yeah, we saw Prof. Carol Ann Benn.
It is quite a horrifying thing. I mean, I think it's one of the biggest dreads that most people have is that C word. Okay, yes. But the fact that now there's so many people who are talking about it, who are going through this, it's a terrible journey. It's not only just for the person who's going through it themselves, but everybody around you as well. So trying to find a way of helping people to accept it. I mean, and even worse when it's with little kids who have had it as well. Because, I mean, I think, you know, I've been working with CHOC for years and years and years with the wonderful Sadie Cutland, who used to run the oncology unit, the children's oncology unit at the Joburg Den back in that time ago. You know, you sit there and you think, is this a death sentence? That's the first thing that comes to people's minds is, is this a death sentence? Now, you went through your treatment. You were almost completely clear, going for your one last scan, and that was this year.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, it's back again.
Yes.
How? Why?
Yeah, when you just hear it, when they phoned me after the biopsy they did, and the lady on the other side said, did somebody phone you? I said, no. And she said, you're positive. And I said, positive what? Still not believing anything. And she said, you've got cancer. So when I put the phone down, it was on a speakerphone. I said to my husband, did she just say I've got cancer? And I was like just dumbfounded. And yeah, within minutes, my son was there. And yeah, it's a terrible thing. I still remember my husband. He was standing by the pool and he just shouted out loud. Must have been to God. But why me? You know, why me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's terrifying. But luckily, I've got so much support, my family and everything. I remember the day when I had to go. We had a family lunch with everybody, and nobody knew then that I went for a few tests and stuff. Me and my husband were busy with this thing for about 2 weeks, and I didn't know yet that it was cancer. But then when we had the meeting, the lunch, I started talking and telling them, we are going to hear what it is. And so my one daughter, she just broke down in tears. She expected the worst. And the other one, the tears were just rolling. And my son, they always the positive people. They said, no, it won't be so bad. And they all rallied around me, holding hands, and they prayed that everything would go well.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's definitely life-changing. And it's quite similar to COVID.
Mm.
In COVID, you also didn't know what's going to happen. Are we all going to die? And we're isolated. So my first year, it was 2019. And then when COVID came, I all the things is like similar. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. So my second year of cancer was in during COVID as well.
Good Lord. Okay. So a double whammy basically being thrown at you. Okay, but let's take it a little bit further back. I mean, because, you know, you had quite a hard life as you were growing up. I read something in the book, which is going to be coming out sometime soon, I'm sure. The book itself is an intimate recollection of events in your life, not just on your breast cancer journey, but also how you got to the place that you are and where your positivity comes from. So tell us a bit about your reasoning from when you were a young person, how you've gotten into this headspace as the person you are now.
Yes. So first of all, I just wrote about the cancer and then I took it further. Everybody said, but then write an autobiography from your childhood.
Mm.
So then I just wrote a little bit and I didn't say lots. And as I spoke to people, it came out that they said, but tell your story. So I didn't tell things in there that wasn't so the good things.
Mm.
I also told other things not to hurt anybody, but for me, for my healing. And as I did that, I just got so much stronger. So when I was brought up, there was like alcoholism, violence. Yeah, it wasn't. My dad went on to pension when I was in high school.
Mm.
And then, yeah, the drinking just started. And eventually my mom also joined him. So I never invited friends or stuff home because I didn't know how it was going to be at home. So I was much of a loner. I was like in my room, tidying up. I always say it feels as if they were tired by the time I came because I was the seventh child. And we were all born on my mom's double bed.
Mm.
So I was just left alone. I knew they loved me, but they never like said they loved me. And then luckily in high school, I met a girl that was in the top three academics. And I said, no, I also want to do that. So I studied in the matric. I got like distinctions. I became a prefect. I did sports and stuff. My parents were never inside. They never came to support me, nothing. I just did it on my own. So I could have turned out a real washout. But now that I look back, I had to go through those things. And my childhood that I went through, I think those things made me so strong that I could go through this cancer now. And so for all these years, things that I've written in my book, not even my husband or my kids knew about. So it's so difficult. My husband again said he can't read the book again because he went through the cancer with me. He can't read it again. And then my kids are reading things now that they never knew. So it's so hard for them just to get past the childhood part.
Yeah, so the adversity basically in every single phase of your life has just made you so much stronger.
Yes, and then I realized I always had a home, a cooked meal. Everything was there, and I had to forgive those people.
They just didn't have the love.
Yeah.
That was the thing that was missing.
Yeah, they did love me. They just didn't say it to me. So I had to forgive them, and I had a very low self-esteem. I thought I was never good enough or never looked good enough or whatever. And as I wrote the book, I also realized a little incident that happened. In high school, I was about 15. We were driving on the bus, and this young boy was interested in me. I could clearly see that. And he said, "Can you come and visit me on the Saturday?" So I was so excited. Those days, then I borrowed my sister's oversized pink and white striped jersey. Now, remember, she's like 18 years older than me and had a white pants on and those white plastic shoes were in. I did a bit of modeling so I could make up well, my deportment look well, and I actually felt like a princess. And as we walked to the park with him now, he said to me, "Don't you have any modern clothes?" And I was like so shocked. And he said, "Sorry, I can't go out with you." So with me writing the book and writing some of my little stories that came up now that I've like closed and kind of forgotten about, blocked out, I realized there was the beginning of my low self-esteem. So I've forgiven all those people and I've forgiven myself for not thinking that I'm good enough.
It's a cathartic process writing a book. I mean, so putting it down on paper definitely, and sharing it with people is kind of a good way of getting it out. And I know, I think as we get older as well, we sit there and we still harbor so many painful issues that we should have dealt with years and years ago.
Exactly.
So you're getting to this stage now where you can put it in and tell people how you feel.
Yeah. And there's so many other people that also feel like that. There's definitely people that are worse off than me. I always say, even when I feel very sick with the chemo and stuff, there's people that's even worse off. And to deal with those unforgiveness things, you set free. It's like you were in a prison and you had this stuff. You didn't know but something's not right. And so writing all about all those things and forgiving people, you just feel so much lighter and free. And as if you can help other people, and they just open up to you. Now people come to me and they tell me about their son is addicted and this and this. And I said, "Where does this come from?"
You should start a whole new career, become like a life coach.
And obviously, my love for God is very strong and I've got my faith and I'm clinging to hope. And hope is like an expectancy for a better future than the current situation you're in. So, that's the thing.
Yeah, that's one thing that I saw in the last couple of days. I said, what is one thing that you can never have too much of? One is hope, and if you don't have that, whiskey.
Yes, but I can't have that now.
No, you can't do that at the moment.
Not supposed to do alcohol.
So you're going through your second round now of chemo for the recurrence of your cancer. How long were you in remission for before it came back again?
No, it's my sixth round. Can quickly take you through from 2019. So February 2019, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, stage 3. It was luminal B, HER2 negative, and it's estrogen positive. I'm just saying this so if you get breast cancer, you get put in these blocks. So they first gave me the Red Devil. There's over 100 kinds of chemo you can get. So they put me on one of the worst ones. Red Devil, you can only have 4 and they're 3 weeks apart and you can never have it again. So I was on Red Devil and then for 3 months. And after that, I was on the white chemo, 12, so every week. And then they did a double breast and nipple saving mastectomy with direct reconstruction and silicone implants.
Okay.
And after that, I had 6 weeks of radiation sessions every day, 29 of them. And then according to them, I was clean because they took out everything and put in new silicone. And the second year, 2020, I went for my scans, and the chemo, cancer was just exploding under my arm in my axillary. So I was put on another chemo for 6 months, 12 of them, gems are. And after that, they operated and took out all the lymph nodes under my arm. That was even worse pain than I had with the double breast mastectomy. And then the doctor was very scared that there was some floating cancer cells. But now I had this big operation and the third line of chemo. And he put me on Capexa chemo pills. So you get them in 100 and 500 grams. I got 3,000 grams a day. It's so strong, it dries you out totally. So my feet started to go red, then purple, then it got big blisters on it, then it just peeled. So in the morning when I wake up, there would be dead skins in my bed, on the floor, all over. And at this stage, my feet were so raw and so new, I had to wear socks to work, and I had to walk like very slowly. After that, I went into my third year, now expecting that I'm clean. We went for more tests and stuff. And they found a liver lesion on my liver, the size of a coin. Now I had all these things and they couldn't cut, or the chemo. And the doctor said, okay, they're going to do a very delicate radio frequency ablation procedure on my liver, where they go in with a little probe and they burn it. It's like microwave waves. And it was very successful. If all of this wasn't enough, I got COVID during chemo and was postponed. My sister had COVID for 3 weeks and she passed away. A big black dog bit me. My doggy was supposed to go into the doggy parlor, and as they opened the van's doors at the back, this big dog just grabbed me on my hand. So the next day I had to get an operation, opening 9 holes and fixing. Luckily, no tenants were served. We scaled down from a massive house to a townhouse. Then the one morning I wanted to drive to chemo and my car's engine block broke and that cost a lot of money. So, yeah, that all happened. And then a month after I had the liver ablation, they did some more tests and the doctor said, good news, the cancer in the breast is gone, under my arm is gone, the liver is clean, but. So if your oncologist comes with the word but, you just know. So then I had 2 lymph nodes in the middle of my stomach, deep down next to my liver, that tripled in 1 month. And I had to get chemo as soon as possible. The fourth time. So then I went on a Lavan chemo also for 6 months. And so luckily after that, I was clean for a year, 9 months. But first what happened just before that, so I was busy with my chemo. So when my car's engine broke, that was the December. They also told me I had to pay in $64,000 for this last Lavan chemo. And there's no two ways about it. I had to get that. So now after I fixed my car and we had to sell it, I had $70,000 for the car and a $64,000 that I had to pay in. So what do I do? Do I pay $64,000 for the chemo but I haven't got a car like this? And then my one brother, he blessed me with a brand new Toyota Starlet that January. 17 March, I went for my last chemo, and as they pulled it out of my port, I was so exciting because this is my last one. My brother's daughter phoned, and she said, I said to her, yes, I'm so excited, it's my last chemo. And she said, Auntie Lindy, I just have to tell you, my brother had a massive heart attack. He died 3 months after he bought me the car. Yeah, so I saw that as a sign that my chemo died with him. And with my next test, my next scan, I was clean. For a year and 9 months. And then the year and 9 months was now January. So now my book is going to go in. It's at the publishing house. And 2 weeks after that, I heard I've got cancer again now in another 4 lymph nodes.
How do you keep so positive? I mean, you really are one of the most incredibly positive people I've met. Always got a smile on your face. I mean, I don't know. I think most people would probably just sit down and say, that's it. I cannot do this anymore. Apart from your faith, what else has kept you going? Is it family, having people around?
Yes, I've got a massive support system. And then sometimes when they send me the messages and stuff, when I feel really bad, I won't even read it. But other days, I'll really focus and I read it. So we are a very close-knit family. And my husband, he just loves me more and more every day. And you hear of people that The partners actually, I've got two friends. The partner actually divorced them because they can't handle the sickness. Yeah, my husband, yeah, he's actually also got terrible back pain and hip pains and stuff, but he has to go for those operations, but he won't go now because it's my turn. I must first get healed. So it's definitely that, yeah, and I had my days. I had, after I heard that I've got the lymph nodes, so it was my fourth time that the cancer spread. Then I was really down in the dumps, and I said, no, I can't. I don't want to do this anymore. All the usual questions of why. But, I mean, on the other side, why not me? I mean, these things doesn't happen to, say, maybe a Christian or a non-Christian. It does happen to both. Mm. It just depends how you deal with it. So I've got the promise that there's still like a big future for me. So if you don't believe in God, then you just got cancer and you're going to die. Mm. Or you're going to die by a bus is going to drive you. But, yeah, I've got promises that's there. And, yeah, and there's lots to live for. During my cancer period, I also got blessed with four grandchildren.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, wow. One each year, yeah. So, yeah, they like just energy boosters. I can feel down so much or sick or whatever, then my husband will see. Look now the grandchild's here, now she's boosted and got all energy. Yeah, so I just think it's really a positive outlook in life. Mm. Just put on, you can't smile and be sad at once. So just
you're
put on your
right
smile,
about that, yeah.
Be positive. But, and
how do you think that your book is going to help other people? I mean, what do you hope they take away from it if they read it?
Yeah, just how I live. As I've seen now, how I got so strong. So in the beginning, people would say, and then it was just the beginning. Yes, Lindy, how are you doing this? You're going through. Oh, and by the way, now I'm stage four, but I'm not going to let it put me down. I'm still positive. So every time, and then especially when I told you all these other things hit me, it wasn't in a matter of 6 months that both my brother and sister died and my car broke. And I got salmonella, food poisoning, from one oyster. So I was in hospital. This all happened, yeah, in that period. And we moved. That's a big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, I just get up and I just say, devil, you won't get me under. I mean, even this now that I got cancer again, now that my book is going to come out. Mm. No, I'm not going to stop. So I just wrote a little page at the back that I'm currently busy with chemo, but this book must come out. Mm. And it's just as I talk to people, I can see how it really gives them hope. So in the beginning, I would say, no, ach, if you also got cancer, you would also do it. And then eventually my husband just said to me, just say thank you. Just appreciate that you look good.
You look fantastic, I have to tell you. I mean, you really have just kept it going the whole time. And there's a whole story there about your daughters also when you had to lose all your hair.
Yes.
And then you didn't want to wear the wig because it was too hot.
Yes.
they donated their hair for you to have a wig.
Yeah, how precious is that? Yeah, so they all went with me to when I had to go and harvest my hair because it was a guarantee. Two weeks after the red devil, I'm going to lose my hair. My uncle just said so, and my husband still said, but doctor, what about the 2% and don't lose the hair? He said, she's going to lose hair. And it was 2 weeks. Yeah, so I went and we cut my hair shorter, and my daughters went with, my two daughters and my daughter-in-law, and they each donated pieces of their hair as well. So she made a wig with my long blonde hair, with their hair in as well.
Mm.
And about a month after that, my middle daughter, Nandi, she stays in Bloemfontein, she drove all the way and came to cut off all her long blonde hair. It was on a bum, so she could feel what I had to deal with.
Mm.
And she said she feel it's going to go for a good cause. And a 12-year-old little cancer girl got her long hair. So that's also precious, yes.
But there is so much that people can do to make the journey a little less terrifying, because I think, as I said, cancer diagnosis, for many people, they're sitting there and thinking it's like a death sentence, okay? We do hear so many people do manage to get through it, especially if you catch it early. But there's also the failures as well, okay? Mm-hmm. And I know that but with your book, I mean, trying to demystify, it's not even demystifying, it's kind of just making it more of a real thing where you can say, hey, okay, fine, so maybe you have got this cancer. Here's my story. Hopefully something I've gone through might resonate with you and help you get through yours.
Yeah, but it's always been a matter of faith over fear. And then I listened. I read Knowledge is Power. I mean, if you go to your oncologist, he tells you what's wrong with you. He doesn't tell you what to eat or not to eat. So I went and I Googled and I asked people that are in it now, What do you eat? What shouldn't you eat? So I try to keep by that. Mm. I don't strictly live by that. I mean, alcohol, sugar, starch is not good for you, but I still have it. If we have a social thing with the kids and the whatever, I have my glass of wine, but I don't do it always. Yes, so I really believe it's that. And then, as I said, I've got the support, but then, especially with the chemo, I only recently found out that because of all the cortisone keeps you awake.
Mm.
So when I have my chemo, I can't sleep. I've never actually slept during the day when I'm supposed to rest. And then at night, you sleep at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, then you're awake. Mm. Then everybody's asleep. And then it's when, I always say it's then the devil, then your mind goes forward. Gee, how long am I going to die of this? Or how is it going to be or whatever? Yeah, and then I just pray. I just pray and ask the Lord to help me and make me strong and whatever. Then there's nobody else. So I always say, if you don't have the Lord,
ultimately,
then who do you speak to?
It's you. Ultimately, yes. It all boils down to you.
Yes.
Okay, so now you've got the postscript in the book which you wrote in February of this year. Where are you going to go from here? Are you going to have another book coming out about other kind of stuff that you've been going through? I mean, is this it? Do you feel that you've still got more that you can bring out? I mean, this one isn't even on the shelves yet. Okay, so I'm like just thinking of your plans for the future. I'm thinking, I mean, a cancer activist is like, you know, we've had so many of the people who have been doing it, like the late Mark Pilgrim as well.
I mean,
when he went on his cancer journey.
Terrible, yeah.
You know, just to be there as a motivational speaker for other people once your book is out.
Now, I really believe I need to share my story. I need to shine my light. If I'm just going to keep quiet, then who's going to know about all this?
Mm.
And I think my book won't ever have an expiry date. It's always going to be, it's true life, that's my story. And people are asking me now already, are you going to write the next book? I just said no, because that was such hard work. And why would it help now to explain chemo now for the I'm having chemo now for the sixth time, and during the book also right in the beginning somebody said they see me as the David slaying the Goliath. I suppose that's kind of where my title came from, but I'm picking up my fifth chemo. My fifth cancer treatment now, so I say it's my fifth little clippy, so it's finished now. Yeah, I don't think I'm not sure, but whatever's happening now, I've kind of explained during the book. So I want people not to read the book and then feel sorry for me and just be blocked by all my pain and suffering I went through. I want them to see how I got through it.
Mm.
That's the idea of the book.
That's the important thing.
Yes. No, and I definitely, as you said, I'm open to do motivational speeches. I know I must do this.
Mm.
If the Lord brings you to something, He'll bring you through it. Yeah.
Okay, so when the book is out, which is, you're just doing
very few
little changes to it, and where will people be able to get it from?
Yes, so first of all, I tried through the Big Five, and I was rejected, and I didn't tell anybody for about 4 months. The family were asking, I just kept, because I felt so bad. And then somebody told me, listen, J.K. Rowling was rejected 12 times for Harry Potter, and look where he is now, so just keep on. So when that happened, I just kept on writing and whatever. And now when I look back, this was actually the best decision ever. At the moment, the book's not going to be in bookstores, but it's going to be on Takealot paperback and Amazon paperback.
Mm.
And you basically click on the link. I've tried it, and they delivered mine the very next day. Or they deliver in a day or two. But I did order a lot of books. I am going to be at two Women's Days now, the 8th of August and the 16th. And I definitely want to go further with this. And then it's going to be on Amazon Kindle as well, and ebooks. And they putting up a website for me. I went self-published through Reach Publishers. They are excellent. They're also going to go digital. I'll be on X, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube.
Going to be everywhere. Going to become a media mogul.
They're going
mogul.
To do all these things. Yes, yeah. No, I believe it must. It will go. Yes.
Well, Lindy, I mean, just from the fact that what I know of you, and like, I mean, I'm just the moment I heard that you were writing the book, I thought, no, I had to talk to you about this because I think we've all been touched in some way or another. My mother went through breast cancer, fortunately, not a very, very bad, and they got it very, very early. But we've all been touched by this absolute beast of a disease.
Yes.
And the fact that your positivity has brought you through it to this point. I hope it really resonates with so many other people and people who are not only going through the actual chemo and radiation treatments themselves, but the people around them, just to understand how you can still have that power of positive thinking as well.
Yes, yeah. I hope I can bring some hope and inspiration out there.
Well, I'm sure you will. So everybody keep an eye out. Google it. You'll be able to Google it and she'll come up. Lindy Liebenberg. Yeah. This is her autobiography where she chooses life, slaying cancer together. Thank you so much for joining us and all the best with the book, and we'll catch you with the next one as well.
Yes, thank you, Melanie. See you soon at Pilates, as soon as I'm able to.
Got to keep busy, because if you rest, you rust.
Yes. Thank you.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.